You're listening to Lavender Louisville, a Racing Louisville podcast.
Hello, Big Perp Nation, and welcome to another episode of Lavender Louisville, a podcast dedicated to Racing Louisville FC. I think I'm Joe Havelda.
I believe I'm Cody Roof.
On today's show, Racing claims a three-game win streak for the first time in club history. We recap three games, preview three more, and talk roster size. We've got a good one for you this week, so let's kick off the first half. The first game we need to recap is the one that happened between us recording our last episode and it actually airing. Racing decided that winning the Chicago match felt good and said, hey, let's do that some more. Marking their 2023 debut in the UKG NWSL Challenge Cup with a 3-2 home win against the Kansas City Current. It was a midweek game with lots of rotation in the starting 11. So, Cody, break it down for us.
Honestly, this one, I'm going to go ahead and preface. I was a little surprised with how even it felt when you were watching it. But the numbers don't necessarily reflect the how balanced it was on the field. But with it, and I won't spoil the ending, but with it being pretty close, I'm pretty pleased with how we played in general. Going into the minute by minute, even as early as the third minute of the match, we got a really good run with Canu and Monahan on the counter. Canu wound up losing it pretty easily, but this actually foreshadows that the two of them have really good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
In the seventh minute, we had a little bit of a scare when Murray had a really bad giveaway just outside the 6-yard box. Nothing came of it, but it's enough that it's like you can kind of see that she has been lacking regular minutes, and she was definitely knocking the rust off.
I was gonna say she looked rusty in the first 10-15 minutes of the match. I even mentioned it that night. But then she settled into it and she looked pretty good afterwards, but you can definitely tell that she hadn't played much before that.
We recovered really quickly. And in the eighth minute, Howell instigates a counter with a great pick at midfield. And when Canu rushed it up the field, she lost it pretty easily, but it resulted in a corner. So it doesn't feel like it was that big of a loss. She's a name that I'm probably going to say a couple more times just simply because I'm watching her a little more closely because she's had a few games to stick into the roster and I'm just not feeling it. So I want to see why I'm not feeling it. If you hear me say her name more often, it's just simply because I'm really giving her the eye test.
I'm going to back you up on that because I've been doing the same thing. I'm trying to figure out why she hasn't broken through yet. I really love her positioning, her strength, and her energy to win a ball back, right? I've noticed, I don't think she has the best first touch when the ball is played to her.
Oh, yeah.
And when she does kind of square up and thinks, okay, I need to shoot now, she'll take two or three more touches. And that's when she ends up getting closed down by defenders and losing the ball. So if she can speed that process up a little bit and get finishing goals, then it's obviously going to be a lot better. But I don't know. There's a couple of nitpicky things I've seen with her because I've been doing the same. I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, it doesn't take long for her name to come up again in the 14th minute. Monahan slots a great pass through to Canu, who gets picked again. And we give up the first goal in the 17th minute. Sitara Murray did not mark the only Kansas City player in the box, and they just put it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where her turning point in this game was, because from that point forward, yeah, she was actually, you know, pretty much a powerhouse. But it really sucks that we had to go down 1-0 for her to get her head in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, she did give it away in our defensive third just a couple of minutes later. But that one, it feels like it was a little bit more of a rush pass. So I'm not going to really ding her too much for that because she was really starting to work a lot harder. we get it back and we push up the field in a pretty good shape, but we're on a counter in the 22nd minute and kind of loses it again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to reclaim it in the midfield. And in the 24th minute, DeMello puts through a great through ball to Kanu, who works really hard for what should have been an amazing premier goal for her, and which would have erased so much of my curiosity about what's going on with her, but it gets called for offsides. So, and it was really, really close. So
it was so close that I don't know why the linesman lifted their flag. When it's that close, they're supposed to keep their flag down and let VAR fix it, right?
Yes.
I looked at the still frame. I think I sent it to you. Like, she was maybe off by her shoulder. Like, it was very close. And if they hadn't raised their flag and caused VAR to overturn it, do they overturn the call in the field at that point? It's one of those that was so close. They're like, all right, we'll just go with the call in the field, which in this case was an offside. If it hadn't, I think that goal could have stood.
I'm inclined to agree. And I actually sent you back another still with the perspective of the lineman where he saw the line being drawn because he was a step ahead too far.
Yeah. He wasn't even in position to call it.
And so from his perspective, yes, she was absolutely offsides, but drawing it in something that a little more square to the field, it's a lot dicier. But we only had to cry and moan for just a few seconds because literally a minute later, DeMello scored a goal so beautiful and audacious that there are entire articles written about that goal and only that goal. There are that many words already out there for it. I'm not going to beleaguer it. You need to go see it. Please, just if it's just for that goal, go watch the highlights of this game.
So you said about a minute later, and it was about a minute real time after the stoppage of play. I counted. And from the time the 80 French put the ball back into play to the time the ball was in the net was 6 seconds. I'm not kidding. 6 seconds. And it was a worldie. It was a goal of the year candidate. If you haven't seen it, go find the highlights from this game. Do yourself a favor.
So, again, I'm watching Kanu really closely. And about 5 minutes later, she has a good cross through to Monahan that it just happens to be stopped. And it falls to DeMello, who absolutely murders the shot. In the span of 5 minutes, we come from 1-0 down to 2-1 up.
I counted that one, too. It was 257 seconds between goals. So, less than 5 minutes, yeah. But DeMello was unmarked on her entire run.
Yes.
So, yeah. Like you said, Kanu crosses the ball in. Addie Merrick actually, you know, sticks your foot out and blocks it, but it just lays there and sits there perfectly for DeMello, who's unmarked, crashing into the box and first times at home, just crushes it. How do you leave her unmarked like that?
I mean, there's a reason that they're struggling.
Yeah.
In the 45th minute, Lund plays a pass out really well under pressure. It's another one of those things to where, you know, she's usually so calm and composed. That one weird blip that we got a couple of games back, it just keeps standing out as being so uncharacteristic for her.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50th minute, Kanu.
Hang
had
on,
another...
before you get to halftime, or second half, real quick. There's one point I want to make, and this is going to sound like me being the guy complaining about officiating when really this is tying into something that happens later in the game. Okay. So bear with me. Cause in the 32nd minute, Monahan gets taken out from behind. It's a really bad foul. Right.
Oh yeah.
I feel like that could have been a straight red.
Really?
I think it was a yellow. I mean, it was from behind, no play on the ball, didn't have a chance. It was dirty. It was a dirty foul. And Monahan was down for a while. It could have hurt her badly, right? The reason I'm bringing this up, I feel like that could have been a straight red. It wasn't. But there was another red card later in the game that wasn't given. We'll get to that. I just wanted to preface.
Gotcha.
So go ahead. Sorry.
All good. In the 50th minute, Canoe with another weak giveaway in the attacking third. I mean, she's playing a little too loosely for how the NWSL plays. I mean, you've got to keep that ball damn near under you to maintain possession when you're driving through defensive lines. And she's playing with it half a step out.
Yeah.
And you just simply can't do that. In the 53rd minute, Chidiak had just about an open goal and just happens to shank it wide. I mean, that one, it's heartbreaking because, I mean, you know she feels bad about that one. And going up another goal this early would have, I think, been transformational.
It was on her weaker foot. She's left-footed. It was a right-footed shot. So, you know, we'll give her a little grace. But, yeah, I mean, oh, she wants that one back. Probably still wants it back. She's probably still having nightmares about it. It should have been a goal is why. I'm not going to, you know, dog her too bad for it because she is great and had a great – it was just an unlucky miss, man.
Yeah, for sure. And then right after that, Canoe plays it back to Monahan for a really good shot. And again, those two have really good chemistry. I mean, not quite like Ersig and Pickett or Katlana and Davis, but it's up there.
Yep.
And again, because I'm watching it really closely, in the 85th to 86th minute, Kanu does really good work maintaining possession. She's playing the ball much closer to herself, and it winds up leading to Katlana slipping it through to Ari Borges, getting one-on-one with the keeper, and she just kind of shanks it. I mean, you can't score them all, but that one was, you know, I was really hoping, re-watching that I was watching Canoe get the hockey assist, because that was really good work.
Yeah.
And then just about a minute later, Katlana almost gets one herself. Just, she is so dangerous. And I am so looking forward to getting more than 15, 20 minutes out of her. And in that same minute, Dabinha winds up firing off this great shot. I mean, Dabinha is a world-class player. Of course, she's going to be a threat. And Millay gets a foot on it just enough to deflect it out of the path that Katie Lund was expecting it to go on. It wasn't enough to qualify it as an own goal because it was already a shot on target, but that's how it happened. I mean, the goals that we gave up in this game is, I mean, it was just kind of lucky circumstance for them, honestly.
Did you skip over Ari's goal?
Did I?
I feel like, yeah, because Dabinha's was at the very end.
No, Ari got one-on-one with the keeper. Did I not? I guess I didn't state explicitly that it was a goal.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, because I want to break that one down, because my God, that was a pretty one. So sorry for the confusion. Let's go back. Because a couple thoughts on that. First of all, I've been counting seconds on goals. Ari scored 91 seconds after setting foot on the pitch. A minute and a half. She gets this goal. And the part I wanted to break down was Tembi bringing the ball up, and she gets surrounded by four defenders that all crashed on her, which left Ari, Kayla Fisher, and Laura Millay all wide open to her right. And she just lays it off for one of them. And Ari gets on and scores. So I don't know what Kansas City was doing there. That's why I just wanted to go back to that real quick.
I got you. And again, I mean, when I was watching that, I don't really keep track of the stats or timeline or anything while I'm doing the rewatch. And when I was watching it happen the second time in real time, I was really hoping that what I was watching was building up to that goal. And sure enough, I mean, Canoe did the hard work to make that goal happen. It was a really gutsy 3-2 effort that I really don't think that that scoreline reflects how lopsided I think this play actually wound up being.
I very much agree, because on on Kansas City's last goal, that Dabinia goal.
Yeah.
Part of that was because, what was that, like 88th minute, something pretty late, right? Racing had a corner. They're up 3-1 at this point, and they decide to take a regular corner. They send it into the box like they smell blood in the water and they want more goals. It gets cleared away to Dabinia, who just marches all the way up the field. She's an incredible player and scores that goal, right?
Right.
And in the press conference on the field after the game, I think it was Becky that asked about that, asked Coach Kim, like, hey, you're up 3-1. There's like 3 minutes left in the game. Why are you taking regular corners instead of short and trying to kill the game? And he basically said, yeah, good question. Because shortly after that goal, Racing got another corner and they kicked it short and kept it at the corner flag and just killed off time. Like, they kind of learned their lesson on that.
Right.
The last thing I want to bring up is what I was foreshadowing earlier was, it was on Dabinia's goal. Before she gets it, the player that got it before, I can't remember if it's Labonte or someone, right? Tembi fouled her pretty badly, like dragged her back and fouled her pretty badly in the build-up. Obviously, they gave an advantage because Kansas City still had the ball and they ended up scoring. Tembi was already on a yellow card. That 100% should have been a second yellow on Tembi for a red. That's what I was bringing up earlier when they didn't give what I thought could have arguably been a red on Kansas City in the first half, and then we didn't get one in the second. I'm just going to say this ref was not very good all around.
Fair.
And Tembi should have been given a red in that game. So
on that one, they played advantage, but I am really shocked that after the play had ended, that it didn't get walked back.
I'm not saying they should have stopped the play to give the red. Yeah, absolutely. After the goal, they should have been like, hey, by the way, here's your second yellow. But I don't know. I think the ref like misplaced her cards or something.
All right. So we played them once and then we played them again. What did that look like?
Well, hang on, because we got to go through stats.
Ooh, okay.
Possession stats. Racing had 56% of possession to Kansas City's 44. This number's wild. Racing had 21 shots in the game, which is a lot, and 3 on target. And they had 3 goals. So basically all their shots on target went in, but it was only 3 out of 21. Kansas City had 9 total shots with 2 on target. So similar, both of their shots on target went in. Passing percentage, Racing 81% pass completion to Kansas City 71, which is pretty on par for them. Racing had 4 offsides called to Kansas City 0. Racing had 11 corners to Kansas City's 5. So yeah, with those stats, that kind of speaks to how 3-1 probably would have been a more representative scoreline of what the game actually looked like. They just got that kind of consolation second goal at the end. The predictions that we had for this game, you and I both called this a 2-0 win. So we get points for the result. FIFA called it a 5-2 loss for Racing. Was obviously a little off.
Hey, you're pulling away.
I know. We'll get to that after the third one. I'll give the final tally, the standings, the prediction standings. Our next game to cover, like you said, is the 2-0 away win against Kansas City. Little fluke in the schedule, had them play twice in 3 days, but this was a league game that saw both teams put out their strongest starting 11. So let's get into it. First two notes I have on this: 10th minute, really good ball movement by Kansas City leads to a shot just wide. 11th minute, more good ball movement by Kansas City gets a shot off that hits the outside of the post and goes out for a goal kick. They obviously came out strong in this one. At that time, they were sitting on a 3-game losing streak. They were at home in front of a pretty good crowd, playing the team that had just beaten them 3 days before. So they're obviously trying to come out and make a statement. good on him for that. Didn't quite happen for him. So, because in the 12th minute, shortly after that, DeMelo pressures the ball high up the pitch, forces a weak back pass to the keeper. She doesn't stop running. She keeps going after it. As the keeper kicks it away, DeMelo sticks out her left foot and deflects it into the goal. This is
the audacity.
So I love anytime this happens, because it happens so rarely. Like, you will see players charge after the keeper all the time, a lot, right? Especially high pressing teams like Racing. It's like, if the keeper's going to sit back there and think about it for a minute, and especially if they're trying to time waste, not that that's what they were doing in this game, but one of your high attacking players is going to go, well, if I rush in there, then they're going to put the ball back in play, or I can just put some pressure on it and sometimes get lucky. Which she did. It was amazing. So it's 1-0, right?
I would like to throw in, when she was asked about the play, there were a couple of players, Howell included, that when the first bad back pass was pulled back towards the Kansas City goal, DeMelo was told, go after it, go after it. And so they, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, I think she said it was Howell and Monahan.
Yes.
They were basically it. Telling her, get after it, get after it, keep going. So she's like, all right. I mean, and it's the epitome of a hustle play, right? And that's just who Sav DeMelo is. She is hustle. She's hustle with skill. She's one of the best players in the league this year. So I just love seeing that hustle rewarded, especially in just a hilariously awesome goal like that. The next 26th minute, Kansas City gets a corner. It's cleared to the top of the box, and Labonte gets a nice shot off, but it's just over the bar. So they haven't given up. They're still trying. Shortly after, in the 27th minute, Kansas City sends the ball into the box. It's headed away by Ursig. Ari gets up for the aerial duel and heads it into space for Wong Shuang to get on it, who sends this beautiful through ball up the field to Savannah DeMelo. And I say beautiful because it bypassed two or three defenders and essentially left DeMelo and Kirsten Davis against one center back. So with that one pass by Wong Shuang, she took out the midfield and put her team on a 2-on-1 break. So they're steaming up the field. Davis is in front of everyone. She's offside. And I was yelling at her, get back on side, get back on side, even though I was watching at home in my basement, right? So she slowed her run just enough that as the last defender back starts fading towards DeMelo, DeMelo waits the ball perfectly across for Davis, who is onside barely. and one times at home, bottom corner, right? She was so close. She was, when I saw the replay on that, she was barely onside. And I'm going to get to that. I think it was the next game. She was called offside a bunch. Actually, it might have been this one. I can't remember. But Davis has been offside a lot. And in our season preview, you set the over-under for her being called offside at like 15.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if that was you saying that she'll have 15 goals called off for offside, or just she'll be called offside 15 times. I can't imagine it was the former, because I can't imagine her scoring 15 goals. But anyway, 15 offsides in the season might have been a very low over-under. Davis gets called offside a lot, right? So I'm beleaguering this point to say that she just barely got back onside for this goal. Yeah, so Racing's up 2-0. Our favorite scoreline this year, apparently. Can't get away from it. 31st minute, Racing gets a free kick into the box. It pings around a bit. Davis gets a shot off. It's just wide of goal. 35th minute, Hal gets a yellow card for a tackle for a call that I didn't really understand it. Like, she goes in for a slide tackle on CeCe Kaiser, and she wins the ball cleanly. And then Kaiser just kind of trips over her. They called it a foul. Okay, sure. But also a yellow card. Didn't really get it. It was kind of a strange call, but didn't really matter.
On that one, honestly, I feel that the only realistic thing is it might have been accumulation. And even then, it's a little, soft, but you know, you got to look at who we're talking about here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I would believe it if it was accumulation, because she is leading the league in fouls, right? Committed. The only other thing I can think of is maybe she very clearly didn't think it should have been a foul and said something to the ref that got her booked. I don't know. Whatever. Not gonna harp on it too long. 38th minute. There's another great buildup by Racing. Davis gets a shot off. It's blocked out for a corner. It was a really bad corner by Pickett that didn't even beat the first defender and allowed Kansas City on the counter to get their own corner. I'm going to bring that up because she did that a few times in this game, and it was kind of annoying. The last thing you want to do on a corner is not beat the nearest defender at the near post. Like, get it to your people in the box, right? Stoppage time in the first half. Mace gets past Malay, squares it to Dabinia, but Ursig blocks the shot. Again, another league leader in block shots. She does it a bunch. She did it a bunch this game. Getting into the second half, 51st minute, Monahan brings up the ball, lays it off to Wong, who finds Davis in the box. Nice shot near post. That one, I really thought that one should have gone in, but it was just a really nice save for a corner. It was another bad corner by Pickett. Didn't beat the first defender, but they didn't clear it too well. Racing gets it back, passes it around a bit. Ari gets off a nice shot just wide. So they're still punching Kansas City in the mouth at this point. Oh, here it is. 53rd minute. Davis is offside for about the fourth time this match by my count. She is offside so many times in this game, except for when it really mattered. 54th minute. There's a beautiful ball over the top from Howell to DeMello. She lays it off from Monahan, who is making a nice overlapping run. Goes end line. It's blocked out for a corner. At this point, Kansas City's starting to look gassed. Wong sends in the corner because it's on the left side, and she floats it in the air straight to the keeper. So in this game, I bring this up because they were winning a lot of corners. They just weren't doing anything with them. They weren't looking threatening, which is interesting because early in the season, they looked really threatening on their corners and even scored a goal off of one. I don't feel like they've looked terribly good on corners in the last few games. 56th minute, Dabinia gets into the box. There's a mad defensive scramble, and then she puts the shot just over the bar. I think this is a really nice example of Racing's bend, don't break defensive mentality that I think they've had since day one. Honestly, there's better quality and better talent in the defense now, so it looks even better. I have this one written down. 61st minute, there's a yellow card shown to Kim Bjorkgren on the bench. I bring it up because when I was watching the game the first time, I'm like, why are they giving the yellow card to Kim? What did he do? Watching the replay, a couple minutes before that, he was yelling at the ref because DeMello got taken out in the buildup again, and it wasn't called and wasn't even given an advantage. And we spoke a couple episodes back about how, yes, Savannah DeMello leads the league in fouls drawn, but they're still only calling like half the fouls against her. So this was just another example of that. And Bjorkgren's screaming at the top of his lungs. I'm not going to repeat what he said, but the playback feed on Paramount did pick it up clearly. I just bring it up because I didn't know that he could physically yell. He's such a quiet dude. But the ref took umbrage to it and booked him.
Yeah. And if you watch, even up to the last second, he's pleading his case, you know, counting the number of times that DeMello hasn't.
As he's getting booked. Yeah, he's taking off on his fingers. Like, you didn't call this one, you didn't call this one, you didn't call this one. I'll take the yellow. Yep. Sorry about that, but come on.
Yep.
So that's what you want from your coach, right? Kanu subs in for Monahan in the 62nd minute. There's a better corner from Racing, and Ursig actually gets her head on it, but puts it over the bar. 64th minute, Davis is on her own. She gets off a nice shot just over the bar. So even this late in the game, up 2-0, they are taking it to them. I think they've learned their lesson from previous 2-0 leads. Don't stop or it'll go away. 65th minute, Lester with some really nice recovery speed to stop a break. Ari and Labonte go up for an aerial duel. Ari gets taken out with a blow to the back of the head from behind. No foul given. And when I say that, I mean no foul on Ari given, because that's apparently what they've been doing all year, is the person who's in front and gets hit from behind gets the foul called on him. I just noted that because that's that we've gotten several calls this year on that. 71st minute, Dabinia sends a nice ball into the box and gets a little cheeky backheel shot from Cooper, but there wasn't enough in it. Straight to Lund, easy save.
Honestly, that one I feel is one that's going to be overlooked, but it really does show Lund's skill because she was only a couple of yards out, like 2-3 yards, and yeah, she was still able to make that reflex save.
Well, that goes to her positioning.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you put yourself in the right position as a keeper, when someone's that close to you, you're cutting down their angles to where they can score. Right? So it's reaction time, but it's also positioning, and Lund's positioning is really, really good. Yeah. I mean, that one was literally like 2 yards away from her. Into stoppage time in the second half, there's a nice play by Kansas City to get into the box. DiBernardo gets off a dangerous shot. Lund, here's your reaction time, right? I mean, DiBernardo got off a really nice shot from not far out, and Lund just stuck her hand out and deflected it to the side. Like, that should have been a save of the week candidate. Can't remember if it was or not, but good Lord. In the ensuing play, she got another really nice save again, right? Not quite the double save like we've been talking about, but it was very, very close to each other. I still hold, I think she's the best keeper in the league until someone convinces me otherwise. Shortly after that, there was a ball popped up in our box and several players went up for it. Ari gets taken out by Kanu and Dabinia, goes down with a head injury. Trainers have to come out. I'm only bringing this up because as the trainers were out there talking to her and I guess going through concussion protocol, because she got hit hard in the head, I was thinking, she doesn't speak a whole lot of English, guys. Like, how is this going to help? Dabinia comes over from the other team, her fellow Brazilian, and squats down. And I'm only assuming that she was translating for her. And if so, that's adorbs. Yeah, Kansas City kept pushing hard in the last few minutes, but it was just too little too late. Racing ends the game 2-0, which I didn't know was allowed from this season. Apparently you can end a game 2-0. That's great. And it marked the first 3-game winning streak in Racing Louisville club history. Also, it gave Racing the first positive goal difference in the NWSL table since 2 games into their inaugural season. They've not had a positive goal difference since the second game of the first season.
Those heady times when we were at the top of the table.
Yeah. I think, what, after like the first game of our first season, we were sitting in first place.
Yeah. That is fact.
Oh, something, man. Like, yeah. No. Anyway, yeah, first 3-game win streak in Racing history. Any final thoughts before I go through stats and stuff?
Just be still in my heart. The 3-game win streak, I mean, it's chicken soup for the soul right there.
Oh, man. We were riding high at that point. We were like, yes, this is what we've been talking about, everyone. Here it is, finally. We'll get to that in a minute. But I'm not going to belittle the 3-game win streak, because everyone can tell this team is so much better than it ever has been. Things are clicking. We just needed the results. And we finally started getting them. I'm not going to belittle that, even though we'll get to that in a minute. So stats from this game, pretty even, actually, for a 2-0 win. Possession, Racing had 51% of possession to Kansas City's 49%. Racing had 15 total shots with 4 on target. Kansas City had 18 shots with 6 on target. I think most of those were at the end of the game because they were just peppering the goal. Racing's passing percentage was down to 74%. Kansas City's was up to 75%. The stats page that I use showed that Racing had 3 offsides, and I know that's wrong because I counted Davis having at least 4 and none for Kansas City. Racing had 8 corners to Kansas City's 5. In our predictions, I called this one a 2-1 win. So got the result right. You called it a 1-0 win. So you got the result right and the clean sheet again. FIFA called it a 4-3 loss. They called it a 5-2 loss in the first Kansas City game. And they gave us a little bit better chance in this one, the 4-3 loss. So FIFA was wrong again. All right. Moving on. Finally, on that 3-game win streak, Racing was back home at Lynn Family Stadium to face the North Carolina Courage. It was a beautiful Saturday night. The sky was orange. The color purple was out in full force. The crowd was lively and loud, ready to watch the perp get even bigger. Unfortunately, that wasn't meant to be. Now, keep in mind, Cody and I watch every game a second time in order to analyze them for the podcast. So as much as you listening at home hated this loss, we had to hate it twice. Cody, walk us through it.
Okay. We actually started out really strongly. For about the first 10 minutes, we held them to their defensive third. Mm-hmm. And it was every bit that, you know, lively come out and punch them early attitude that the team's really grown into. Because it wasn't until the 10th minute that they even got into our defensive third. Mm-hmm. By the 14th minute, Lund is asked to make her first save of the game. Racing is controlling the game, but they're still not making any chances. And, you know, here we are a third of the way into the first half. And we're the game is in our hand and we're just kind of, you know, tossing it aside. And this was something I was looking at in particular because while we were watching the game, it felt like we were not pressing effectively. And in the 18th minute, North Carolina has the ball at the edge of their defensive third, and we don't have any racing players in their half at all. Really getting to watch it a second time, it was really not as pronounced as it felt like in real time.
Mm-hmm.
We were pressing effectively, and we actually caused a lot of chaos in their back line with it. But for some reason, you know, watching it live, it felt like we were just giving them, you know, their entire half of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, moving forward for the 21st into the 22nd minute, Monahan is harassing the keeper, which I guess after the DeMello goal, Racing has just kind of thought, hell with it. Let's just run at the keeper every time, see what we get.
They should.
I like it. And she was able to collect the ball, and she got past the keeper, but she was running diagonally away from goal and couldn't quite turn her body to get the ball back on frame and squirts it wide. If she were turned 15 degrees to her left, that would have been a goal all day.
From my seats in my section, my entire section stood up cheering because we thought it was a goal. We thought it was in. And part of that was because she rounded the keeper and she had an open shot. It should have been. And then we saw Casey Murphy, their keeper, put it down for a goal kick. And I was very confused until at halftime, someone told me, no, it didn't go in. It hit the side net. She missed it. I was like, oh,
I told you.
Yeah. Well, I think Alan told me first. So I'll give Alan credit.
Fair enough. No, I mean, I can see it from your angle, you know, right there, field side. You see that and you see the net ripple and you're just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. When she rounds the keeper, open goal, I see the net ripple. I thought it was in. So,
yeah. In the 32nd minute, I specifically made a note of this because I was watching for them abandoning the high press, but it was really effective. I mean, in this particular sequence, I mean, we wound up over the span of 4 minutes forcing them to play it back to their keeper for a long kick out like twice.
And, well, part of that is because a couple minutes before that, in the 28th minute, DeMello sat down on the field and asked for the trainers to come out for treatment. And if you watch closely, I saw this live and on the replay, she looks at the rest of her teammates and like motions towards the bench, like, get over there. Like basically saying, I'm going to get some treatment. Go talk to the coach. We need some instruction because this is not good. And then coming out of that, those next few minutes were really strong by them. So that's that kind of led into, and that's also a really smart, heady play by DeMello. I'm not saying she wasn't hurt, but if she was hurt enough, she's like, get over there. Well, I'm gonna do this for a minute. Get over there and talk to the coach. You know,
I absolutely believe that she had something going on.
Yeah.
The she wound up pulling up just a touch lame, and she called the ref to make sure that play was getting stopped, which is the smart play that is definitely, you know, playing into what you're saying there. Rather than, you know, just sitting down and, you know, play can continue on. And
yeah, and I'm not saying she was faking it or you know, being shady. She needed it. And at the same time, as she was down, she looked at her team who was just kind of standing around. She's like, get over there. You know what I mean? Because North Carolina's team had already gone to their bench during that to get instruction. She was like, guys, go. It was just some leadership and some smart play. But I'm just trying to give her credit for that.
Fair enough.
Because it worked.
So in the 35th minute, Laura Millay has been tasked with making sure that Carolyn, on the Brazilian national team, one of the most skilled and dynamic forwards in the game, can do as little damage as possible. And just the same, I mean, she's tasked with being the offensive engine down our right-hand side.
Yeah.
Because the left-hand side is just stacked with names. And in the span of 5 minutes, on two separate occasions, she completely dusts Carolyn with a great set of pivots where she spins out and completely leaves Carolyn in the dust. One defensively,
her inside out.
One defensively and one offensively. So just absolutely schools her on both sides of the ball.
Loved it.
And in the 44th minute, DeMello gets a yellow, which at this point isn't really that surprising, but this one felt like just an absolute accident. I mean, she wasn't even looking in the direction of the defender and just completely trucks her. A foul, yes, 1,000% every day, but there was no intention in it. There was no malice. There was no dangerous play. I mean, they just collided in a bad way.
I've seen it given before, and honestly, I have this one written down, but I have it written down as no real argument for me. I thought the ref in this game was actually very good.
It's possibly fair. If she was aware of where that player was, yeah, I'd call that a booking anytime. One of the things that's absolutely jarring to me going into halftime is we had 37% possession. 37%.
Yeah, I mean, North Carolina, I think, is leading the league this year in possession. So it's not surprising that they would be winning it, but like essentially 60-40 at home against Racing, who also likes possession. Yeah, that number astonished me. I think Racing also only had like 72% pass accuracy in the first half. It was just, but it was all counterattack. So when Racing got the ball, they were moving up very quickly. And, you know, they'd either get a chance and miss or get it turned over in the attacking third. And then North Carolina would have more of a slow buildup, and that adds to possession numbers.
Right.
Yeah, 37% in the first half is shockingly low.
We come into the second half, you know, firing on all cylinders, driving straight at North Carolina. We've got them pinned back in their defensive third. And in the 48th minute, Howell forces a really good save. Just, you know, lets it rip. And
from distance.
Yeah, right at the edge of the box. And their keeper has to stretch all the way out, you know, on a great horizontal save that, man, it sucked not getting that goal. But when you have to make someone work for it like that, I mean, it's worth watching.
Well, and that keeper is Casey Murphy, who right now I think is the number two goalkeeper for the women's national team. And after this World Cup cycle, I think she's hands down going to be the number one. She's awesome.
And we maintain pressure for the next stretch. It wasn't until the 51st minute that North Carolina finally gets into their offensive third. I mean, again, starting really strong. And they're able to sit in our defensive third for a couple of minutes, and it wound up leading to this absolutely impossible goal. it was a header that just barely manages to go over the top of Katie Lund at full stretch. So we're talking you know, 8.5 feet, 9 foot of Katie Lund stretching all the way up, and the ball just a couple inches higher than that.
And it was a header from an impossible angle. Like, she was basically on the end line.
Yeah, I mean, if she was half a step to her left, she would have been out of bounds. And it just so happened that her, you know, there's no way that she intended for this to happen. She was just simply trying to keep the ball in play. It just happens to take this nice little beneficial bounce right into the goal.
I will give her credit for the celebration, though. The round off the backhand spring, 8 out of 10.
I mean, it was heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's like, that's soccer. I mean, yeah. When I went back and looked, rounding it off to the nearest digit past the decimal point, it had a 0.2% XG, which, I mean, it's literally as low as I've ever seen. I've never seen anything lower than that that wasn't literally a shot from midfield.
Speaking of the XG, if you really want to just pull your hair out, North Carolina won this game 2-0. I think their XG was less than one.
Yes.
And Racing's was over two.
Yes.
And North Carolina won 2-0. So,
So, about 7 minutes after that, there's a good bit of back and forth. Neither side actually maintained good stretches of possession. But in the 60th minute, after frankly being completely owned by Millay the entire game, yeah. I mean, just about making her a non-factor, Carolyn finally figured out what to do. And
showed us why she's Carolyn.
She drew Millay into Ursic. So using Ursic as a screen to pull her defender off. And then the second that Millay was no longer stuck to her like glue, fires off a shot that Katie Lund had no chance on.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really nicely worked goal.
Yeah. And a brilliant individual effort. I mean, yeah. Nobody on that team other than her could have done that. And I dare say that the soccer IQ required to use an opposing defender for a pick is just off the charts.
And not just any defender, it's Abby Ursig.
Yeah. And I mean, Ursig did nothing untoward. Like,
no.
She maintained her position exactly where she needed to be. And Carolyn just took that brilliant next step and, you know, just let an absolute rocket go. So, you know, good things happen when you have some of the best people in the world on your team, right?
Apparently.
And in the 73rd minute, Borges gets hit with a frustration yellow. I mean, there's no, again, this one didn't really have any malice. She just got a little too aggressive with trying to get the ball back. And if you watch, you know, she even apologized to the player after the fact. She knew she did wrong. Not to, it doesn't excuse what she did, but it really does speak to how passionately these players are playing right now.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to give credit to the officiating because I dog them when they're bad, like in the last game. I really thought the officiating this game was, I want that ref every game because it was accurate. It was fair. It didn't. There was nothing she did wrong that changed a lot of the game. I don't know. I don't want to harp on it too much, but yeah, I mean, that was a yellow. It was a frustration foul. She deserved a yellow.
Yeah.
And she was apologetic. So
she still kept her head in the game. Just a couple minutes later in the 76th minute, she almost murders the opposing keeper with a shot. This whole sequence of play
was fantastic.
It absolutely was. I mean, it was a great buildup, and I don't want to skip over it, but at the same time, I really am just shocked at the power that Iri Borges has at her disposal. Because yes, it was from you know, a few paces out, and she let it go, but it hit the keeper directly in the torso, and you know, she had the presence of mind to wrap the ball and go to ground, but she stayed to ground for a while.
Yeah. So this was from a corner that Pickett took from the left, because I think Wong had already been subbed out. So Pickett takes the corner. DeMelo drags the shot just wide, and it looks like it's just going to go out for a goal kick. But Pickett actually gets to it again out of nowhere, right? She squares it back to the middle of the 6-yard box where Ari is, who absolutely rips it from like 2 yards out. Now, this, again, I've been singing Casey Murphy's praises because she's amazing. And it also goes back to positioning and reaction time. Casey Murphy positioned herself perfectly, exactly where she needed to be to cut off the only place that Ari could have gone with it. And yeah, Ari just ripped it from like two yards out. But the fact that Casey Murphy did catch it, it didn't just like bounce off her and fling back. She caught it and went down. Like, yeah, that was a really good sequence of play by Racing, and really good keeping by Murphy.
We wound up with another sequence of a little bit of back and forth. There wasn't really a whole lot in the following 10 minutes to amount to much. We get to the 85th minute, though, and Katlana almost punks the entire North Carolina defense. Like, so dancing good. Around. She engaged all four of them in this sequence, and it took her being ganged up on 3-1 to finally dispossess her.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that if there was another threat for them to look at just off to the side, she would have beat whoever was remaining 2-on-1 and had a shot on goal.
Yeah.
Not a doubt in my mind.
Buy your Timby Cutlana stock now, because it's only going up.
And for the rest of the game, we've got the pressure being put on. You know, that powerful, straightforward gameplay that comes from, you know, lust for the win and desperation. And I can't help but think that if we played with a little more of that energy earlier in the game.
Oh, yeah.
But the last good chance that we had was in the 88th minute, where Millay sends in this beautiful cross. I mean, all the credit to her. If I was going to have a player of the game, it's Millay all day.
Oh, easily. Not a whole lot to choose from, but absolutely earned.
And, you know, Baggett gets on the end and just perfectly nods it into goal. And so that's a tale of the tape. We lose 2-1, where honestly, it feels like we probably deserved more out of that.
Yeah. A couple things to note. I saw someone on Facebook asking about when Racing got their goal right there at the end. There's a bit of a scrum in the net where Kanu goes in trying to get the ball out of Casey Murphy's hands. And they were kind of asking about that. And just for anyone that's kind of newer to soccer, just trying to, you know, figure out what some of these nuances are. That's very, very common in that game situation where you're down 2-1, you've scored your one very late. There's not a lot of time left. Normally, when a goal is scored, you'll see a couple minutes before the restart because the team's celebrating and everyone takes their time. But when you're down a goal and you need another one, there's not much time left. You want to restart very, very quickly. So the team that's up will grab the ball because the team that's down will grab it and put it on the center spot and get back in position and try to get the game restarted very quickly. So that's what the little scrum was about. There's nothing really in it. Casey Murphy very smartly grabs the ball after it goes in. Kanu tries to go get it and can't. The ref has to come over and separate them. That's all that was, really. There was nothing too major in that. Very common. I just wanted to address it just because I saw someone asking about that on Facebook. But yeah, final thought. So we came into this game on a 3-game win streak, like we've said several times. I didn't really see too many other, really anyone note, though, that those 3 wins came against the two bottom teams in the league table in Chicago and Kansas City. Basically, and who both are just having a dumpster fire of a year. Right. So I don't want to belittle the 3-game win streak because they absolutely should have beaten those teams. But looking back, thinking, oh, they've turned a corner. They're going to go on a massive win streak and they're going to win every game. This game against North Carolina was the first true test against a middle of the pack bubble team. We were sitting in eighth place. They were sitting in seventh. There was 1 point separating us. The winner was going to move to sixth. And they won. And they looked like they deserved to win. So it's going to be interesting how Racing responds to it, especially because their next game is in the Challenge Cup. And speaking of the Challenge Cup, there are four teams in our group, including Racing, and two of those teams are Chicago and Kansas City, the two bottom teams in the league. And the other team is Houston, who is sitting directly above Racing in seventh place in the league table. Not having the best year. I mean, Racing isn't either. But there are two teams that on paper should be easy points in the Challenge Cup. So we're, what, 10 games in, 9 games into the league season? Not quite halfway, but almost. And we're sitting in eighth. Do we shift focus to the Challenge Cup at this point, or is it still too early?
Honestly, it's a great question. And again, going back to what I said much, much earlier in the season, that it's a lot more enticing to me to go for the Challenge Cup because I feel that it's just going to be a shorter path towards getting hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, assuming that we are able to keep it together, that we use our depth at the bench to get past Kansas City and Chicago, that means that we are past the group stage. And we're in the knockouts. And from that point forward, I mean, all we have to do is string together, you know, 3 good games in a row, and we lift a trophy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead, because like I said, we're not even quite at the midway point of the season yet, and we're sitting in eighth. It's not like we're, you know, in 11th or 12th, like Kansas City and Chicago. And I don't want the team basically giving up on a playoffs spot, right? It'll just be interesting to see moving forward. Anyway, so the stats on this game, Racing ended with 44% possessions. They had a little bit more in the second half. North Carolina had 56%. Racing had 17 total shots with 6 on target. North Carolina had 13 shots with 5 on target. Racing's passing percentage was a little bit better at 76%. North Carolina's was 79%. Racing had 1 offside all game. North Carolina had 1. I forgot to mention, I actually have a note that when Kirsten Davis, who started this game, got subbed out, I wrote down, was Davis even in this game? I hadn't noticed. So with only 1 offside all game, and we were talking about she's offside all the time, she didn't do much, man. So anyway, Racing had 4 total corners. North Carolina had 3. Getting into predictions, I called this a 2-0 win. I was wrong. You called it a 2-1 win. You got the score line right. But it doesn't count.
I just made myself sad.
And FIFA called it a 2-2 draw, who is also wrong. I don't know if anyone else caught on to this, but we laugh every time the FIFA predictions come out because I've noticed the pattern that it's either a Racing loss in a 7 total goal game or a 2-2 draw. So that puts me at 4 out of 10 so far on the season. I'm counting the Challenge Cup ones. We'll just do it all as one. So I'm at 4 out of 10. You're at 6 out of 10. FIFA is at 1 out of 10. Not doing well, FIFA. And I love you for it, because that means I'm not in last place. Whistle! All right, there's the whistle for halftime. So let's move on to halftime adjustments. Last episode, we talked a little bit about Jessica McDonald's extended excused absence and trying to figure out, well, not really trying to figure out, people trying to figure out what was going on there, getting a little upset about it. I don't know. And basically we were saying, look, if we needed to know, we would know. All right, let's give her space for whatever it is. She'll let us know when she wants to. Sure enough, last week she let us know. Jessica McDonald is expecting her second child. She's pregnant. It was happy news. It wasn't even anything bad. super happy for Jess. Obviously, she is taking the rest of the season off. She's not leaving the team. She's just going to be on excused absence, essentially, or whatever. I don't even know how they designate it, but she is taking the rest of the season off. So we won't see her on the field again this year. That does clear a roster spot.
Now, there is specifically pregnancy leave in WSL.
Perfect. Right. I didn't want to call it a season ending injury because I knew that would be wrong, but essentially the same effect. Right?
Yeah. And they, I really like the language because it's not just pregnancy, but also if you adopt a child. So I'm just really tickled that that kind of inclusivity is written into the competition rules.
Yeah. So what that means is, like a season and an injury, she doesn't count against roster space for the rest of the year is what I'm getting at. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that pregnancy is like an injury. Don't you know what I'm saying? So that being said, though, Amina Ekic, should be back very, very soon. We saw her in practice last week and she was in practice. So, I mean, she should be back very soon. I don't know when.
Yeah.
Dr. Nadia Nadim is going to be back eventually. It's going to be a little bit longer for her, but she's going to be back. So those are two injury spots that are going to be now active roster spots. Hillary Beal and Riley Parker are still considered on loan, I think. Hillary might be back.
Yes.
But either way, once their loans are done, they now count against roster space. That puts us, with Jess being the only one not counting against roster space, that puts us at 27, and the cap is 26.
Correct.
So that was a very long way of getting around to this discussion, right? Now, which is, we have 27 players, we can only have 26. What are we going
to
do?
Well, and just to clarify, from discussions that you and I had on previous episodes, we got clarification from Racing that there is a flat cap at 26 that we cannot pass during the season.
Right.
And really, in my mind, the first thing that comes up is Riley Parker's not coming back. We're going to loan her out to Tigres for the Apertura, which it starts in a few weeks, just after the World Cup, I believe. And so she is not going to hit our roster in 2023.
Okay. So not that she's not coming back ever. It's essentially, she's going to stay on loan is what you're thinking.
Right. And in a very real possibility, though, I think that there's a shot that if she continues to do well, though, I mean, we're going to exercise her one-year option because she was signed to 1 year with one-year option. We'll secure that. But I feel that we may be angling towards maybe selling her to Tigres because, to be frank, at forward, once everyone's healthy, I don't think that we're going to. Yeah. And so this might just have been a roundabout way to audition a player with the notion of selling them on, which, I mean, she's excelling. She's getting minutes that she probably wouldn't have gotten at Racing.
Oh, and 100%.
So, you know, it's a good path for her career.
So that puts us at the 26, right? So we're good. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to leave. However, comma, the trade window opens, I think, in June. If Racing has their eye on signing a new player, then we're back to the same conversation where we have to clear off roster space one way or another. We can essentially release a player that can be part of a trade. We can send them on loan. Something, right? And that's the loan thing would be difficult because we're talking about June when we're like one of the only leagues that plays this time of the year. Everyone else plays, you know, fall to spring. So at that point, say we have our eye on someone that we want to bring in the next transfer window. We want this person. We sign them. Who do we lose to make space for them?
I don't think we do.
You don't think we sign someone?
I don't think we lose anybody because Hillary Beal is still out on loan. And depending on what the exact language is for the A-League players down there, she currently continues to occupy a roster spot in Australia. And so she's not hitting our player cap. If we allow that loan to continue into next year, then it's not an issue. There's our number 26 spot back.
Okay, so you're thinking Hillary Beal stays on loan designation as well?
I feel that that's going to be the most likely thing to happen until we can figure out another mechanism to free up roster space, because it's already there.
Yeah, okay. It's if they decide to sign two people in the next window, then we got to talk about it again.
Right. But I mean, and there's possibilities of us letting a player go that hasn't seen any game time. And I hate to say it, but possibly Olivia Sacani, because we're already just so deep a keeper as it is. Yeah. And with Beal away and, you know, Sacani not being the natural second choice keeper, I feel that that's still Jordan Bloomer. That gives us, you know, two keepers that we can call on. And we can recall Hillary Beal if we wind up finding ourselves in a pickle.
Okay, I was going to say, because you definitely want three keepers in case one gets injured, then you're down to one. You don't want to be in that. So, okay, I see what you're saying, where if, God forbid, something happened to Katie Lund, she was out for a bit, and Jordan Bloomer is now the keeper, we could just recall Hillary Beal, bring her back, and she and Bloomer, one of those two would be the keeper if you're letting go of Sacani.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, there is another mechanism in place that I feel it may violate the spirit of the rule, but not the letter. We could keep Nadia Nadim on season-ending injury through the World Cup, even if she gets called up.
Well, what do we do after the World Cup, though? That's a Band-Aid.
It is, but we talked to Coach Kim, and he said that her attending the World Cup is a 50-50 proposition. Now, considering we're going to be moving players around, because we've got at least six players that we are anticipating going up, which that puts us at, you know, if you forgive the players on loan, I mean, it puts us below the 22 player minimum that we need. So we're going to hire national team replacement players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the expiration of that, I don't know if we're going to see somebody break into the first team like Zenana Wine did.
Yeah.
But there's a possibility that when the players start coming back from World Cup, we may see some of those players that just simply don't get minutes. We're going to waive them. And it could be possible that those national team replacement players, we sign them to full contracts. I think that might be the mechanism that we bring them in under.
Interesting. It's all quite confusing.
Shenanigans.
Okay. Well, anything else on that?
Honestly, I really hope that Nadim is well enough to travel. But if she doesn't and she does play for us, I think that it's going to go a long way towards us working through the group stage of the Challenge Cup.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But that's all I got.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see if she goes to the World Cup or not. Because on the one hand, I mean, she hasn't played in a year, right? On the other, she's in her mid-30s. This is most likely her last one.
Yeah.
So that's when you asked Coach Kim and he said 50-50, I'm like, oh, yep, that tracks. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see. And hopefully soon we'll know, because that means that she's healthy sooner. Well, there's the whistle for the second half. So let's look ahead to a few more games. Again, there's going to be three in our preview because the third one is another Wednesday night Challenge Cup. So basically, we're just stuck in this rut of having a game in between us recording and releasing. So hopefully it all makes sense. But the first game that we're going to preview, because we already previewed this week's Challenge Cup game against Chicago in the last episode. So let's look ahead to the Washington Spirit away this Saturday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. Washington started out hot, and I don't want to say they're cooling, but they've slipped down to fifth place in the table. So this one should be interesting. It was 2-2 at home the first time we played them in that terribly windy day where we came back from a 2-0 deficit at half. This is at Washington. This should be interesting.
Right. And honestly, it's a team that, I mean, we've spoke to it before. We did not expect for them to come out on a hot hand. Now, if you look at their last two results, they lost 2-1 against Orlando, which, I mean, we can't exactly criticize.
Yeah, we did too.
And then drew Gotham, who is high up on the table, 1-1 at home. But when you go through and break down what those goals were, Washington conceded a bad penalty with just a needless display of defense that, I mean, honestly, it was a bad enough play that led directly to a goal that that player might be on the bench next game if I were a coach. So I almost don't even want to credit Orlando for that one. And they responded very well. About 5 minutes later, they got a great goal from a free kick. And the rest of the half was quiet. But Washington came out banging in the second half. In the 55th and 56th minutes, I mean, going back and counting like you were doing, they were about 48 seconds apart. There were two separate instances where Washington almost scores from distance outside the box. So really dangerous play. And in the 77th minute, Orlando just got a good goal from a corner. Even though Orlando came in on the hot hand, because they had five games unbeaten in a row. This one, honestly, I think it kind of felt that Washington got done dirty. They probably could have pulled this off as a win. And then in the Gotham game, they got a shot off unmarked at the top of the box and nothing the keeper could do about it. But Gotham in the second half, it was all them. They had a great cross into the box that just happened to be waved off for VAR. And then in the 69th minute, Gotham got a good goal off the corner. So honestly, this one feels more like if Gotham was a little tighter on their defense, they would have shown why they're a top of the table team. So Washington, I feel where they are right now, they're on a cool streak. And I think they may settle into being towards the bottom of the playoff table. Or if they don't heat back up, I mean, we may encounter them right around us on the bubble. In their last two games, they have 47% aggregate possession, a 71% pass completion, which in the Orlando game, they had 78%. So, yeah. 16 total shots and 10 shots on target. So, they've got a 25% conversion of their shots on target, which is actually pretty good. But very obviously, it's from individual effort if they can't cobble.
And only 16 shots in two games.
Yeah.
That's not many.
This is a team that's struggling. And so my thought is if we can come out and play our game, I expect us to at least break through with a goal. But I feel that they're going to come out, be hungry to come home and play well in front of their fans. So I don't think that we get the clean sheet. I'm calling this one a 1-1 draw.
Okay. So they're sitting fifth in the table right now. So like you said, they're moving towards the bottom of that playoff picture. However, second, third, fourth, and fifth place in the table right now all have 16 points, with Gotham in the top spot with 17 points. So this one's tough because, yeah, they were hot and then they cooled a little bit, but is that reflective? I don't know. It's at home, you know, at their home. It's away for us. We haven't been stellar on the road this year. So I'm calling it a 2-0 loss for Racing.
Fair enough. To be honest, that was the number that first came to mind, but I feel that we've got a bounce back in us from this last one. And frankly, Washington, just from watching their last couple of games, I'm not impressed.
Okay. Well, the next one is the following Friday, June 9th, 8 p.m. Racing's back home, and for the first time this season, faces the San Diego Wave. How do they look? Very similar. They started really, really hot too, and almost a similar story. They've settled down to fourth, just above Washington, but again, you know, on that 16 points. So
right, yeah. And there. For them, I don't think that it's as much of a slide, just simply because I think that they've been lucky, and I'll be damned if teams that don't make their own luck don't continue to be lucky. And I think that San Diego is absolutely one of those teams. In the last couple of games, they've had 46% aggregate possession with a 71% pass completion.
Yeah.
I mean,
pretty similar to those Washington numbers, isn't it?
Well, the average of their pass is lower. So it's not just a bad game that's throwing that number off.
Yeah, okay. Fair. Yeah, that's not very good.
With 25 shots and 12 shots on target.
That's good.
With four of those being goals. So a 33% conversion rate. And going through, they beat Houston in Houston 3-0. But the first one was an absolute gift. It was a bad back pass that the keeper came all the way outside the box and didn't get it. That's the one thing you can't do as a keeper. And Alex Morgan just chipped it into the goal, and there was nobody back there to do anything about it.
That was very, very, very similar to DeMello's one where she crashed the keeper and just essentially deflected it in. It was almost the same thing.
Well, except the judgment on the keeper was far, far worse because they came way out of the box instead of, you know, not being as aggressive inside the box, which is the criticism that I could have put on the DeMello goal.
Yeah.
This one was just, here, open goal, have fun.
And Alex Morgan.
Come on. And then in the 58th minute, I'm questionable to even give them the benefit of the doubt on that goal because one of Houston's backs went down with a head injury before the goal was scored. And so that hole that they scored through, hey, guess who would have been there?
And they didn't stop the game?
Nope.
Ooh, they're supposed to when it's a head injury.
Well, there we are. That's why I don't want to give them credit for it.
Interesting.
And the one goal that I will give them credit for in the 79th minute, through traffic at the top of the box, I mean, let it rip and see what happens. And sure enough, it went through the entire Houston team. The entire team was between the shooter and the goal, and it just found its way through. Simple as that. Lucky.
I'm going to pause real quick. I'm laughing because this is the one, I think it was San Diego that tweeted out the video of it. It was Madison Pogarsh. San Diego tweeted the video of it, and they captioned it all caps, "Let's go P-O-O-O-O-O," like "Let's go Po," but it definitely looked like "Let's go Poo."
Somebody needs to talk with their PR person about that one.
It was a gorgeous goal. Yeah, their social media person definitely messed that up.
And then they drew Portland playing in San Diego. And it was scoreless up until the 86th minute, where Belle Bixby, who she's one of the best keepers in the league, came off her line and got beat. Rare and just kind of a gift.
Yeah.
And Portland countered in the 90th with the corner, which, I mean, Portland just flatly outplayed San Diego. But again, lucky. I'll go through some numbers real quick. Their expected goal put together aggregate through the season, 11.4. Their goals scored, 17.
That's pretty good.
So they're outperforming their expected goals by 50%. Because wow. There's just all these weird, lucky goals that surround this team.
Well, they also, though, have the players that can capitalize on that luck.
Right. So, I mean,
I'll give them that credit, because if you're going to get lucky, you got to be able to capitalize on it. And they're doing that, it sounds like.
Going back to what I was saying about teams making their own luck.
Well, exactly.
But I feel that we can spoil their party, especially since they're coming here. I'm saying that we squeak out with this one 1-0.
Oh, 1-0 win?
Yep.
I like it. I've got 2-1 loss because I'm sad about our last game and I haven't gotten over it yet. And these are two really tough teams, especially, I mean, Washington away, that sucks.
Yeah.
And San Diego, yeah, it's here. So, I mean, you're probably, I mean, it could probably be a draw or a slight win, but I'm sad. So I'm marking it as a 2-1 loss. Also, if we keep picking the same results, I'm never going to catch you in our predictions table. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, you can hang on to that recency bias all you want.
Well, I did, because essentially when we beat Chicago, I was like, we're winning every game now. And I called the last couple games wins and was wrong about North Carolina. So I'm sticking to it. I don't care. Whatever. I'm calling 2-1 loss. You're calling 1-0 win. Cool. We'll see. The last one to look at is, again, one of those that's going to fall the night after we record our next episode. So we'll go ahead and cover it now and then recap it in a while. This is Wednesday, June 14th at 8 p.m. home at Lynn Family Stadium. It's a Challenge Cup game against Houston. Also, it's Pups at the Pitch night. Everyone bring your good boys and girls. I'm bringing Nimmy. She's going to wear her racing bandana again. She came last year. She loved it. She slept through the whole match. She is the cutest, sweetest dog in the world. So if you want to meet literally the best good girl, find me at the waterfront end. She will be there. Pups at the Pitch. Let's get into it. Houston Challenge Cup at home.
This is another team that I think is, I mean, they're really struggling. Aggregate for the last two games, 49% possession, 72% pass accuracy, and that's pretty constant. 24 shots with only 6 shots on target.
In 2 games?
Yeah.
And their last game, they scored 2, so oof.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's really not. I mean, I just don't think that the team is firing on all cylinders, and it's almost painful to see. I mean, this is one that I am first and foremost a fan of racing, but I do have a few other favorites that I wish well on, just not as well as racing. And I've got a soft spot for Houston.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I don't see how they're going to really be able to put on any kind of decent performance after being blown out by San Diego 3-0. And yeah, they won their last game 2-0 against the Current. It's like, yeah, big whoop. You know, been there, done that.
And how much does that even translate? Because it's a Challenge Cup game. So again, we expect rotation. So if the numbers right. are low in their last two league games with their best 11, does that just mean ipso facto they'll be even lower if it's a Challenge Cup game?
I mean, that's my thought. And I'll admit that I'm feeling a little up on Racing at the moment, and I know I've put the last couple as wins, and I'm willing to bet at least one of those is wrong. But I feel that the potential is there, and I'm hoping that we're in a period of the season where we're going to click more often than not. But this one, I'll call this a 2-0 win, and I may be conservative on it.
Okay. Yeah, the way I looked at this one, because it's a little harder because it's a Challenge Cup game, instead of, you know, really looking at their recent run of form in the league, because in the league, they're one of the closest teams to Racing as far as expectation and performance this year, I would say, because they're sitting in seventh, we're sitting in eighth. They are 2 points ahead of us, right? Essentially, they won one more game than we did and have drawn one fewer. That's what separates Racing and Houston in the table. So very even in that regard. I think we have the deeper bench.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a Challenge Cup game where we're going to rotate starters out. I think, and it's at home, and there will be puppies there that we have to make happy. So I'm with you. I'm calling it a 2-1 win. I don't know where the one came from for them, but I'll give it to them. But yeah, 2-1 win for me in that Challenge Cup game against Houston. I think that's winnable, and especially if my predictions are right on the Washington-San Diego game, we'd lose both of those, then playoff spot starts really slipping out of our grasp in the league, and we might be shifting more towards focusing on the Challenge Cup. But either way, I definitely think we win that game. So, all right, fourth official has lifted the board. We're now into stoppage time. Cody, I think we all know by now that we are lucky to have Savannah DeMello and Jalen Howell on the same team at the same time. But does everyone realize just how lucky we are?
Yeah. I went back and looked because, you know, in that draft, obviously, Naomi and Germa went first to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pulled Jalen Howell with the second pick. And with our natural fourth pick, we picked Savannah DeMello. And I was kind of curious, what about that player that the Courage got to leave Savannah DeMello to us?
Who went at number three?
Yeah. Her name is Emily Gray. And for the little bit that we've gotten to see her play, she's really good. In the last season, she got 175 minutes, played in three matches, started two of them, and got two assists.
It's pretty good.
And has been plagued with injuries throughout. So, yeah, she only played in three games last year, and she's out this entire year with an ACL injury incurred in the preseason. So we got Savannah DeMello. They got two assists.
That's mean to laugh, but I mean, put it that way. So yeah,
it's bad luck.
Here's the flip side of it. Okay. Let's expand on that, because the reason we had the second pick and the fourth pick, if anyone, you know, doesn't remember, because I didn't, honestly, I had to go back and look, is after Racing's very first season, we finished second to last in the table. We finished ninth out of 10 teams, which means in the next year's college draft, it goes in reverse order. So we got the second overall pick. But there were two new teams coming in Angel City and San Diego as expansion teams. So they take the first two picks and moves everyone down. So that moved our natural pick from second to fourth. The way we got the second pick to get Jalen Howell is we did a trade with Angel City. We gave them the rights, the NWSL player rights to Kristen Press that we had gotten in our expansion draft for some reason, for a player that was never going to play here. obviously wanted to play in LA. So we're like, yeah, you can have Kristen Press's rights. In return, we got protection in the expansion draft, so Angel City couldn't take anyone else. We got $75,000 of allocation money, and we got Angel City's first round pick. Now, it ended up, I don't know how they, I think literally just like a coin toss. San Diego.
It was. Yeah.
So it was a coin toss. So San Diego got the first overall pick and LA was going to have the second. So we got their second overall pick in that trade. They got Kristen Press. We got further protection in the expansion draft, a bunch of money, and their second pick, which gave us Jalen Howell. So if Emily Gray ended up being injured this year and only had two assists last year, last season, Kristen Press was injured pretty early in the season and hasn't been back since. Now, little side note, she was injured at Lynn Family Stadium against Racing. It was non-contact, though. It's not like we did anything dirty, but she did get injured here. Just slightly poetic. I don't know. I'm not trying to be mean. But so with the fourth pick, you're saying that North Carolina got, well, third pick, they got Emily Gray and two assists. With the fourth pick, we got Savannah DeMello. With the second pick, Angel City got Kristen Press, who played a quarter of a season and hasn't been back since, and we got Jalen Howell.
Yeah.
That's wild when you go back and think of how that happened.
I mean, I can't think of a draft that one team just completely owned in that fashion. That's just,
well, I can, because we did it again this year in a sense.
Yeah,
kind of. I mean
not to that same degree, but well, true, this one was close, though. Pretty good.
No, that one was, I mean, we got Jalen Howell and Savannah DeMello in a college draft. I mean, that was, we won. So everyone knows that we're lucky to have Jalen Howell and Savannah DeMello. We just really wanted to break down how freaking lucky we are that those two not only are on our team at the same time, they're both incredibly effective. Two of our most important players. One is our captain, and both have already extended their contracts with us.
I believe Jalen Howell may actually be carved out of literal stone.
I believe it. So just wanted to kind of end on some good happiness and some warm fuzzies. And the last comment, really the last note that we have in stoppage time, is that we mentioned last Friday, the day before the North Carolina game, Cody and I actually went to the training facility to watch practice, and then for the pre-match press conference. And that's when we talked to Kim about Dr. Nadim's status and that sort of thing. As we were walking out, we were hanging out with Becky Morgan from Butchtown Rundown, and Ryan Dell, the new general manager, approached, and the four of us basically chatted for like 10 minutes. And I'm not going to go into the details of what we talked about. I don't want to betray that trust. He will announce the things that he's working on when he's ready to announce it, but just know that he is working on some really cool things and really smart, good things, things that are really good for the players. And I had heard only good things about him from anyone that's met him, from players that have worked with them, with the national team. I have only heard good things about Ryan Dell. I finally got to have a conversation with him and got to see it for myself. Guys, we are really lucky to have him.
Yeah. I mean, as stoked as I was about having third-party information about this man, getting to talk to him and really seeing where his head is, this is probably as good an acquisition as any player we've ever got.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the mentality he has of just making things better for the players and being player-centric, but also having the experience and the knowledge of how to actually make those things happen, right? So should be some good fun things coming from him that we're all going to be pretty excited about, you know, if he's able to get them done. So we just wanted to mention that briefly. Ryan Dell's amazing. If you get a chance to see him in a game and chat with him, go chat with him. He'll chat with you. He's a nice dude. He's approachable.
Yeah, and I've watched over 8 hours of playback in the last couple of days. I'm going to go touch grass.
All right, well, there's the final whistle, which means that's our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Please reach out to us on Twitter at LavenderLVL with your thoughts and comments on everything we've discussed, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll see you then. Bye, everybody.
Lavender Louisville is brought to you by Joe Havelda and Cody Ruth. Music by Tyler Lance Walker-Gill. Logo design by Ryan Simpson. Contact Lavender Louisville on Twitter at LavenderLVL or email lavenderlouisville@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.